Enregistrer. Si, quand même. Si ça marche.
C'est bon.
Ah, c'est parti. Mesdames et messieurs.
I should have bought mine. Because I still have my packet at home. If you want to try this, this would be classic French chips and some rotisserie chicken flavor.
Béatrice, j'ai le sentiment qu'en fait l'enregistrement vient de l'ordinateur ici. Je vais le mettre peut-être à la place de tes livres. Ça, au moins, on entendra ta voix. Voilà. Et essaye de parler bien fort. Le micro pour le broadcast, il est là. Et donc, il est multi. Je vais fermer la fenêtre pour avoir moins le bruit du four. C'est bon, cette fois tout est en ordre, on dirait. Hein.
On commence.
Donc, mesdames et messieurs, nous sommes aujourd'hui le mardi 10 mars 2026 pour donc un N plus 1ème épisode du séminaire du mardi, des mardis informels de la Générale. Aujourd'hui, nous recevons Béatrice, un nom français malgré le fait qu'elle soit née en Allemagne. Béatrice, non, c'est avec un E.
That's a different story. It's a French name, but
is there? Do you have an accent?
No. Ah, so they deleted it.
like Beate, but Béatrice, and Zeilenberg, qui est d'origine donc allemande et qui travaille à Paris actuellement. Et qui vient ici nous présenter un projet sur la poussière au sens large. Et donc la discussion s'organise en deux ou trois mouvements. Au tout début, tu choisis de nous présenter un film. Ça va être difficile à passer à la radio, donc faut peut-être commenter avec la voix. Et puis ensuite, on va aborder un certain nombre d'autres projets que tu as prévu de nous raconter. Puis on pourrait en discuter ensemble. J'ai l'impression que tout le monde ici, c'est des habitués, vous savez comment ça fonctionne, donc c'est pas la peine qu'on perde du temps à plus de présentations. Tu as la parole.
Merci Emmanuel. So, thanks a lot for having me here. I'm Beatrice Seidenberg and I'm currently at the Cité Internationale des Arts. That's why I'm also here in Paris. And actually it's my last month here in Paris, and so everything comes full circle, because this was also the first space that got introduced to me, and now it's also the last week actually that I'm here in Paris. So it's very nice that I can be here and present my work, and I truly appreciate the people who are working here and who are creating this space. So thanks a lot to Emmanuel, to Kevin, and to everyone who makes this possible. I'm very happy to have this opportunity. So today we're gonna go for a walk through Paris, but we're gonna be here. But in our imagination, we're gonna walk through Paris. So you're gonna see some images that I collected while I was here. And I will tell you a story where we're gonna make Dust our protagonist and guide. And I will speak in English, but feel free to also, if you have questions in French, and we're gonna sure that we can translate it, so don't worry. And afterwards, I would like to share with you my engagement at the Dust Institute. And for this, I brought some dust catchers with me. I will give them to you later and I will explain it to you. And also I'm going to present a new project called Sembrar Aire, meaning seeding air, semer l'air in French. So, yes. So everyone who's listening on the radio, find a calm spot, make yourself comfortable. And the images are not so important because they're just an illustration of my words. So it's fine that you cannot have the eyes here. And yes, I'm going to start. We rarely travel untouched through space. Airborne particles travel around and within us. They accompany us with every step. What we simply dismissively call dust is a byproduct of our actions, an archive of past and present touches. What does it hold in each of these crossings? So to follow the journey of dust, in Paris I would like to propose a breathing exercise to calm our senses, to unblock our nostrils and to smooth our throat. So please sit comfortably. You can also have your beer if you want to. And you can feel free to also close your eyes if you would like to. We're gonna breathe in out only through our nostrils. And every time we breathe in or out, we're gonna hold for 3 seconds. So when we breathe in, we feel how the air travels from our nostrils to our throat, folding in our rib cages, pushing the belly in. And then we hold for 3 seconds. And when we breathe out through our nostrils, filling our lungs, expanding our rib cage and our belly, we hold again for 3 seconds. And we'll do this a multiple times. And so close your eyes if you'd like to. And we're starting by breathing in and out through our nostrils in our own rhythm.
On va traduire en français. Donc il faut respirer à travers ses narines.
Retenir 3 secondes. Et après, expirer par le ventre.
So we're gonna breathe in through our nostrils. And we hold for 3 seconds. 1, 2, 3. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3. Breathe in. 1, 2, 3. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3. Breathe in. 1, 2, 3. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3. Breathe in. 1, 2, 3. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3. Breathe in. 1, 2, 3. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3, breathe in. And next time you breathe out, breathe in and out normally. And when you are ready, you can open your eyes. Beneath us lies Earth's memory of when the sea once covered Paris. As the sea slowly withdrew, coral reefs dried to dust and over endless eons compressed into stony bones. Do we still feel the sea breeze? Is the rain over Paris trying to refill its basin? We reach into the Earth's belly, laid open its bones and stitch them together over ground, forming our houses, churches, bridges, leaving behind open wounds.
Je précise qu'on a ici une des meilleures spécialistes parisiennes des catacombes.
Parfait. We thought that our imagination and visions of Paris could overcome gravity until roads, buildings, humans and horses were swallowed up in 1776 into chasm. Superstitions and old beliefs resurfaced. Diabolical spirits living in trails of earth are to blame. We came too close to hell. By placing our disease closer to the inferno, we thought we could calm the spirits. But life and death are not oppositions. They mutually define each other. life creates conditions conducive to life. While exposing this marine fossils to air, the bones started to breathe. Get closer, even closer. What do you see? You are breathing with a variety of microorganisms that populate the city. But they do not compete for attention. Just a variety of colors and shapes indicate that there's a universe in each of them. Lichens, a holobiont of fungi, algae and cyanobacteria form symbiotic relationships to adapt to the atmospheric conditions. The first step is up to the fungal partner, which first needs to find a suitable free-living algae. Apparently, a mesh only happens when both the fungus and the algae are in a starved, longing state, urgently in need of nutrients. The algae provides nutrients through photosynthesis, turning carbon dioxide into sugar. In return, the fungal partner provides protection, water, and a stable anchor. Keys gently on the bark of trees or on the walls that hold the sand in place. How many walls can you identify under your fingertips? Lichens are pioneers. They push for ruins and tombs that we eliminate from our progressive life. They know the city, the belly, the sea, and everything that happened in between these 600 million years. In their 1,000 years of life, sometimes dormant and thriving again, they're the first ones settling on surfaces that are very low in nutrients, burnt or frozen, dark or bright, you will find them surviving. Lichens are alchemists. Their colors indicate what they have been metabolized in their lifetime. The golden lichen prefers areas with high levels of nitrogen. We breathe in nitrogen gas all the time. It makes large part of Earth's atmosphere. But when nitrogen is heated and combined with oxygen, it can be a powerful toxin from road traffic, fertilizers, and livestock excrements. However, lichens with brilliant pigmentation thrive in these nitrogen-rich environments. In contrast, dark pigmentation rich in melanin often mark lichen survival in high solar exposure or pollution. Therefore, the darkening urban patina that we find close to streets are fungi forming long-lasting protective crusts, feeding on pollutants. Grayish, darkish, yellowish lichens tolerate toxic concentrations that we inject into the air. In return, they exhale oxygen. Every inward breath was first breathed out by lichens. Life creates conditions conducive to life. Can you smell the air that lichens had held throughout their lives? Earthy, mossy, sweet, slightly leathery and woody. Since the 18th century, lichens have been shipped in tons from Morocco to France to create perfume. Harvested directly from trees, their number has drastically diminished since the 1990s. Their slow growth cannot keep pace with the Parisian desire to be embraced by a sweet cloud. Lichens were also harvested for dyeing textiles, producing yielding purple and red hues, which were especially popular in Normandy until the advent of synthetic dyes. The bones that we dig up are fragile, too thin-skinned. Without the protective epidermis of microorganisms that grow across surfaces, our houses will erode back into marine dust. They hold everything in place. Moreover, thanks to these living organisms, the building skin is able to breathe. In the same way that sweat cools our skin, the pigments of brightly colored lichens and those high in melanin reflect sun radiation instead of trapping it, thereby cooling down the heavy burned city. These organisms thrive because the city is not entirely foreign. Paris limestone walls resemble rocky habitats with nutrient-poor conditions. With little more than air, light, and rain, lichens fasten themselves to stone and begin the slow work of habitation. They are neither guests nor intruders. They return to a mineral landscape that long preceded architecture. And still, we remove this alchemist until only a white skeleton remains to please our visual consistency. The contrast of white and non-white becomes a visual marker to identify threat. The culture of cleanliness does not lead to the perpetuation, but rather to the degradation of our interrupted care for monuments. With every piece of lichen that is removed, a layer of the facade is removed, a layer of the history we are so eager to preserve. architecture is an instrument of control over bodies. For Le Corbusier, architecture was a tool for social engineering, an optimum medium for the rebirth of the white human body. The concept of hygiene, dissecting and eliminating unruly bodies, started in European hospitals, leaped over to colonies, and then to public spaces, making sure that everybody knew its place. Making sure that the outside does not proliferate, not perforate the inside and vice versa. Making sure that bodies are not leaking by drying out wetlands and rectifying rivers. Life should not breed. In these entangled fates of human and non-human bodies, we are reminded that where there is no space for non-humans, there is none for humans. We build our cities guided by fear. A fear not over lack of cleanliness, but of what disturbs identity, system, and order. What terrifies us is the unsettling recognition of our own vulnerability, of our own decaying bodies. Again, we find ourselves back in the guts of the catacombs. Long before surveillance cameras existed, the design of the city itself was the ultimate tool for policing. Array, unify, embellish, proclaimed Georges Haussmann when designing Paris. Planting trees under Napoleon III and Haussmann in the 19th century was motivated by social order, imperial power, and aesthetics. Tree-lined boulevards facilitated troop movement and helped break up irregular neighborhoods that had allowed rebels to build barricades. Like soldiers, trees served the government. But which trees to plant? Obviously male ones. Female trees create a nuisance in public spaces. To avoid the messiness of fruits and seeds, which can attract life to feed on them for free, male trees are cultivated preferably. For instance, the seeds of female ginkgo trees emit a strong odor of butyric acid, a scent similar to vomit or rancid milk. Bon appetit. But this botanical sexism has an unintended consequence. Massive pollen production, which intensifies seasonal allergies and asthma rates in the city damaged lungs. Paradoxically, exactly ginkgo seeds are used in traditional Chinese medicine to treat respiratory diseases such as asthma. Moreover, ginkgos withstand any gender categories. They can switch their gender during their life and are therefore unpredictable when it comes to the selection of urban trees. Could queer plants be a form of resistance in the controlled urban environment? Today, trees are graded higher in the governmental rank. They're ambassadors for green governance. After all, we need to put our emissions somewhere, right? As all good civil servants, they are not allowed to step outside their role. Even if underpaid, squeezed into too tiny uniforms, or disabled, they need to perform. Companies are therefore building prostheses for trees, making sure that their fragile bodies can withstand the weight of winds, vehicles, and steps. For what the government does not have any solutions yet is the high absence due to illness. Pollution and diseases are spreading too fast in the homogeneous environment. However, other life forms thrive in these conditions. Notre Dame, drawn 2019 in yellow smoke, contained lead. The metal particles sent into the river, the soil, and into our lungs. Yet the reconstruction continues with exactly the same material. While France and beyond have been so eager to show that fire cannot destroy a nation's pride, we need to overcoat ourselves with even thicker layers of ignorance, medical treatments, and shielding gear to protect us from the outside truth not wanting to penetrate us. The outside should not come in. Miraculously, amid layers of historical ash, plants sprout in the cracks of sidewalks around Notre Dame. Neither wild nor domesticated, these plants make tensions their home, existing at the intersection of contrasting environments within one ecosystem, laying out world beginnings and world endings side by side. Life creates conditions conducive to life. Where are your edges? Where is your liminal space? Well, we rather continue surviving in the toxic clouds. We patch the cracks, engineer the air, and sterilize the soil, anything to mistake and control for life, exclusion for comfort. To fortify our edges, we invent an ecology without nature. And so the city begins to speak in the vocabulary of green measures and green economy. This allows us not to put nature, which is too animated to be employed, but green initiatives into the service to reach our climate goals. Am I green enough? Are these initiatives promising us that we're able to eat light, to turn sunlight into oxygen? The Green for Green started in the Romantic era. To match the color to the landscape turned into the impossible quest to fix green pigments. They fade and degrade when exposed to sunlight. Until in 1775, a Swedish chemist produced a green copper arsenic toxic pigment that enabled painters to go out into the green with handy metal tubes. In the effort to represent nature, many sacrificed their lives. Green has lost its innocence. Today, the fetishization of green has taken the form of a hypercompensation for the rapid disappearance of natural resources. In our haste to consume everything around us, thereby equating green with growth, we forgot that our resources are soon out of grasp. The realization that resources are finite has led the UN to recast climate change as a geopolitical security challenge. All of a sudden, airborne particles become the talk of the town, obstructing the path to the Paris Agreement's goal of reducing carbon emissions. Their sheer existence seems to awaken a conflict. Natural borders are redrawn, power relations and political systems are put into questions. What a chance not to be missed. Instead of moralizing airborne dust, which leads to guilt-based tactics and scares us into caring, we can acknowledge that we failed in our relationship to the environment. Dust can lift us up from our self-absorbed paralysis. It lures bodies into new configurations, heightening our attention to livable conditions. Dust links the political to the personal, the particular to the universal. Each year, the sand travels from the Sahara to the Amazon, returning valuable nutrients to the soil that are constantly washed away by rain. So last week, for example, this phenomenon resulted in a drastic increase in dust particles in France. Maybe you could breath it and feel it. Hot-tempered mineral particles can reflect solar radiation, cooling the atmosphere on their way and absorbing carbon. This capacity is accelerated when farmers distribute volcanic ash and limestone onto the farmland. Recently, Silicon Valley entrepreneurs started to release balloons filled with aerosols like sulfur to engineer the atmosphere. Sulfur is found in volcanic smog that has already cooled down the earth in the past, leading to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Different from this scenario, big companies receive now cooling credits for investing in another year without summer. On the long journey through the breathable atmosphere, airborne particles often carry with them hitchhikers, like pollen, bacteria, viruses, sand molecules, and of course human-made pollutants that will sooner or later cross our paths. Therefore, we cannot speak of dust as a unified mass. The plural form matters. Each particle within the mosaic tells its own story about its origin, behavior, and impact. So while pollen, dead skin cells, and sand are kept from entering our lungs by our nose hairs and our throat, smaller particles travel further. Dust from construction sites, gases from fertilizers, or cleaning sprays can travel into our lungs. And the one micrometer and smaller, can overcome all bodily barriers and enter the bloodstream. It is these smaller particles, smoke from forest fires, tobacco, vehicle and power plant emissions, that make us struggle to be in the breathable. In a world without gravity, could we decide with which particles we want to mingle? Could the particles decide where they want to land? The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development sees the problem of air pollution in the lack of property rights. For them, defining rights for the use of the atmosphere is critical to prevent its overuse and thus its co-option by unruly dusts. Do you know, my friends, that a curious establishment might be found with the rooms of oxygen where people whose system is weakened could be for a few hours live a more active life? Fancy parties where the room was saturated with this heroic fluid. From an exhausted nation that might make a great and strong one, and I know more than one state in old Europe which ought to put itself under the regime of oxygen for the sake of its health. I quoted from Jules Verne's novel Around the Moon from 1870. The wellness industry took Jules Verne's cynical future of the commodification of air seriously and lures people in China, in the US, into oxygen bars. For $39, you can treat yourself to a 20-minute boost. Humans urge to engineer, police, and commercialize air, and everybody that travels within will always fall short. While we harness airborne dust for green economy and political power, we can never control where these particles land or what effects they have after their journey away of towards us. The more we venture into the earth, interact with the atmosphere, the closer we get in touch with dust. Dust carries our personal stories, but inadvertently links us to the other breathing bodies. We are never untouched. I like to think of the breathable sphere as the tiny humus layer that sustains life on Earth. The atmosphere, like the lithosphere, is constantly turned, overturned, and renewed. They remain generous not through accumulation, but through transformation. And this is not only a metaphor that I use here. In the soil biome and in the air biome, you will find the same creatures. Fungi, algae, pollen, lichens, insects, bacteria, and viruses. While on Earth, soil bacteria circulates nutrients, in the atmosphere, the same bacteria seed clouds, encouraging water to freeze. These bacteria then return to the Earth as rain or snow, and the cycle continues. You see here a poem by Michael Mader, who wrote an amazing book on dust. And it will be amazing if we could all read one line of this poem. Emmanuel, you want to start?
So this poem was written in which language?
It was written in English, but he's German.
Okay. No matter how much you fight against it, dust pervades everything.
It accumulates in fuzzy balls or gathers in even layers.
Adopting two contours of things and marking the passage of time.
In itself, it is also a gathering place, a random community of what has been and what is yet to be.
A catalogue of traces, an inventory of threats, and a set of promises.
Cosmic residue and industrial effluents, dead skin cells and plant pollen.
Hair and paper fibers, not to mention the bacteria and dust and mites.
Who make it their home, dust blurs the boundaries between the living and the dead.
Plant unbendable matter there in the sky.
We inside and we outside, you and the world.
By dust, through earth and under dust, float and move. Je ne sais pas comment dire ça.
C'est de l'ancien anglais.
Ah oui, d'accord.
C'est une citation de Shakespeare.
Yeah. So for dust, thou art, and under dust shall you return. So you are dust and you return to dust. So what does it smuggle in each of these crossings?
Oh, there was another line.
So thank you a lot.
Merci.
This was the petit journey through Paris. And I created this little walk during my time at the Cité Internationale des Arts, because I usually do this kind of walks in the city with people, and we are really walking. It's not a video usually, but this time I thought I will do something else So this was like a piece of this journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I will continue with a little presentation about the Dust Institute and the upcoming project called Sembrar Aire. But do you have any questions for now? Because this was a lot of information. Or if something needs to be translated, I'm happy to explain.
What was the thing with the green paint, which was toxic?
So, Jens Hauser wrote an amazing book on the color green. And there I read this for the first time. The person who was dressed in green. So this was before, like, the metal tubes existed, right? Before people could even go outside and draw on plein air.
Yeah.
There was the problem how to fix these pigments. So until the 1776, then nobody could fix this pigmentation. So they used arsen, which is a toxic pigment, to mix these pigments together so they can go outside, and this is then contained these pigments. So they killed themselves by trying to depict nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more that the pigment that is represented in nature, kind of flashy green,
mm-hmm.
was something that couldn't be really obtained by other than chemical colors.
Yeah.
So we had very pale colors, such as green earth, or such as mixing, but the pure color of this kind didn't really exist. So what mm-hmm. happened is, at the very moment that the Industrial Revolution was withdrawing people from the landscape, from the countryside, we had a fashion of producing green wallpapers. And there was a need for a pigment that was stable enough and representing that green. And ironically, it can be said, I mean, the jar you said, it was mm-hmm. Paris green.
Yes.
So there was an initial pigment called Scheele's green.
Mm-hmm.
It then traveled to Schweinfurt in Germany, where the Sattler farm industry was located. And from there to France, where it was sold as a red poison. And the impressionists actually go out into the green with this heavy, with these metal tubes that were for the first time enabling painters to paint outside.
Mm.
So not have studio painting, but landscape painting outside, and ironically poisoned them with arsenic. So this is the look.
C'est bien ce qu'on appelle le verre de Paris.
Oui, c'est oui. Le verre de Paris.
On est d'accord. Mm-hmm. Ouais,
yeah, this is the craziness of human beings. Okay, so I hope that this journey offered you some insight into how dust can guide us through the complex intertwined phase of humans and non-humans, and how cities are shaped by these drifting bodies, and therefore we need to also envision and act upon the future beyond disciplinary boundaries. So by bridging ecology, urban studies, history, botany, art, and design. And this is exactly the aim of the Dust Institute, which is based in Vienna. It was founded in 2021 by Adam Hüdetz, among others, who is a dear friend of mine and an architect. And we realized that we're actually both working and are interested in the same tiny, whimsical beings from different perspectives. So him looking at the outside space, so at the facades of buildings, and me at the inside in museums where artists are introducing living organisms into the white cube. Ah yeah, disclaimer, I'm an art historian. So we joined forces. So the Dust Institute is a community agency dedicated to ecological, political, and poetic dimensions of airborne matter. And we bring together architects, environmental activists, and scientists to raise awareness about environmental issues and promote sustainable practices. We work with a wide range of mediums, from interactive installations, public spaces, workshops, performing arts, and exhibitions. So you can see on the website all the different projects, but I'm just showing here now the last four. So we have, for example, the Dust Free Chamber, which is a very easy foldable, inflatable sphere that can be put in any public space, and there people can breathe in a completely dust-free air. And there will be like a guided meditation inside. The other one is the Airside Deck project, for example. As I told in the journey, also the sky changes depending on which kind of dust particles are in the air. So when the Sahara dust is traveling, the sky is becoming reddish, but also it changes in the seasons, the sky, and also the beautiful sunset that we find so romantic, which is red or pink, is depending on the air quality and how many dust particles are in the air. So this was also an installation in the public space. And the last project, Weißer Fleck, which means white spot in German. I touched on this topic also during the journey, which I called biopatina. It is this thin layer of microorganisms that forms on building surfaces. And many of these organisms absorb significant amounts of CO2, sometimes even more efficiently than urban trees. And some can even metabolize airborne particles, as I explained before. So the project called Epidermitecture, I wrote with Adam an article about this that you're also free to check out. And Adam is working since many years already on this topic in architecture. So in this sense, they contribute to improving the air quality without needing any monitored or curated space. They're already growing on our buildings. So rather than spending money on removing these layers, as you can see here, the Weißer Fleck project initiated this, we might redirect those resources toward architecture strategies that integrate biopatina and allow it to grow. So I dedicate my time to talk about this topic during the public dust walks that I do in wherever city I am. So like right now in Paris. So last year I was in Colombia, where I did 3 walks in 3 different cities with 3 different communities. So you see here like an example of this. And the participatory tools like the dust catcher kit accompany us during the walks to make the invisible visible. And of course, every city has its unique composition of dust and therefore its own stories to tell. So I brought you some of these dust catchers. You can take one of these later. I will just quickly explain you how they look like and what they do. So it's a very easy, foldable, recyclable thing because it's just made out of paper. So you have the surface here, and you can just pop this out and fold this together, and then you have these things in the end that are made out of paper. Inside you have a filter, the same one that you have in the FFP2 masks. Then you have a little rope, so you can attach it wherever you want. I would recommend to place it on eyesight, because this is where you breathe. So it doesn't make, it's not a meteorological station when you need to have it like up on the roof, but it's about the citizens and of the walking area. And then you can place it in the direction of the wind, preferably not in rain. Otherwise it doesn't really work. And it depends where you put it, of course. You can also put it at home, like on the window.
And in catacombs? Nope.
Catacombs also catacombs. You will be the first one placing it in the catacombs.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
you need to send me a picture. And after, it depends where, but like on the street where I put it at Hotel de Ville, it turned already after 24 hours black. Surprise, surprise. And you will see in the color radiant later what particles there are. But I'm saying it's not a scientific tool. It's really just to see for yourself very easily and quick what is traveling in the air. Of course, you can use it then with a microscope and delve even further. And so the brownish one is like mineral dust, for example, close to construction sites or mines, for example. Then you have black, which is the carbon. Then you have the yellowish one. I think now it's perfect because of the pollen. And then you have more the grayish one, which is more like traffic emissions. So I will give this to you later. And yes, so before I'm entering the discussions about air pollution and the strategies city already implement. I prefer to begin by listening to local communities. How do they perceive and define dust? When do they encounter it? And how does it enter their lives? And surprise, the answer is mostly negative. They talk about pollution, asthma, allergies, etc. So dust is typically understood as a harmful, undifferentiated mass. So the focus lies on its symptoms and effects rather than on its composition or complexity. Dust contains multitudes of life no less complex than our own bodies. So as I try to emphasize through the walks, every action begins with a story. Our stories emerge from our experiences and assumptions about the world within and around us. Air pollution, therefore, is not only about harmful particles suspended in the atmosphere. It is inseparable from our other ecologies and how we define and treat those. Are these resources, are these living systems, or even entities with agency? Therefore, it is short-sighted to believe that reducing car emissions in one place compensate for mining operations conducted elsewhere, because it's traveling. What is emitted in one region ultimately affects bodies everywhere. So I was in the WHO conference on air pollution in Cartagena in Colombia last year, and it really hurt to listen to all these conversations and talks, because there were many, many nations represented, and there was one presentation by the Chinese Ministry of Health, and he was saying how they reduce the emissions in China, but how they did it, which means they never showed. And everyone was clapping, was like, "Woo! If China can do it, then we can do it," and so on. But if China is just putting their minds to Taiwan, Vietnam, and so on, it also will have effect on what people are breathing in and out in China. So because air does not know any borders, so it doesn't make any sense. So yeah, this conference was not very insightful. So, and as I mentioned in the journey, when our lungs are already damaged by fine particles from emissions, we will have even stronger reaction with every additional particle that enters our lungs. As I showed in the small graphic, most of the dust that travel, we can actually filter through our nose hairs. That's why the breathing exercise was through our nose, because this is our integrated filter that we have. But because we mostly breathe through our mouth, it will enter just immediately into our lungs. So there's already a huge like layers of different particles that our body needs to deal with. So by changing how we speak about air particles in urban ecologies, we begin to change how we also act toward them, I believe. So rather than distribute paralyzing or shame-based narratives, I would like to create and share empowering pathways. And for this, I'm starting the platform Sembrar Aire. Ta-da! And it's online now! So I created this website myself. So if you find any bugs, I'm sorry, I'm working on it. I'm just doing it by myself and I'm just starting it now. So this website functions both as an archive and as a platform for artists and interdisciplinary researchers working on the atmosphere and the urban environment. And next to the archive of the previous dust walks that I already showed you, I would like to create an air atlas of the filters that we are distributing in Dust Catcher Kit. So please send me your filters, also from the catacombs, from everything. Because in the end, I would like to create a map similar to this one. It should not be like a map of the globe, but more that these particles are like little pixels showing up, and then people can check where these dust particles coming from. Of course, it's only like a momentum, like a photo. It's not like speaking for the whole city or for the whole street. And under the section, network and dust keepers, I would like to bring together NGOs, grassroots association artists and interdisciplinary practitioners who are committed to enhancing livable conditions for human and more than human life in urban environments. And under the section on dust, I would like to give artists a space for sharing their projects and ideas on this topic. So it's not like me only doing things on there, but I really want to give everyone this platform. And I will launch like the first network meeting in April. And wonderful people that I met in Marseille, in Cali, in Colombia, in Germany will be part of this network. And through the exchange of resources, knowledge, and strategies, we create a space for local complexities while finding solutions that we can implement worldwide. And this is how I imagine we can seed air, by not privatizing air and manipulating the atmosphere, but by taking all the cycles of life into consideration, since dust does not know any borders or political agendas, but just collaboration. Finito.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you, everyone.
Je vous rappelle pour les questions aujourd'hui, for the question today, you need to speak more loudly than usual because there is only one microphone here. So it will work only if you are loud enough.
You can do it.
Qui c'est qui veut commencer? Justement, en parlant fort, on va sortir des poussières de nos poumons.
Oui, il y a une attaque de pierre en plus récemment, la générale.
Oui, on peut parler français.
Oui.
Donc la taille de pierre, qui peut traduire ça en anglais?
Comment?
Stone carving.
I understand.
Yeah, but it's interesting. So actually, I am
carving.
Yeah. So there was a huge source of de poussière calcaire.
Ouais.
The limestone.
Exactly. But just in the room next to us, they all wear FST2 masks because they are very careful about the current epidemics of I don't know what kind of virus, but it's really.
It's not because they all have COVID.
Sorry?
It's not because they all have COVID.
No, it's a community of people who are really very careful about they call this the law of the weakest. And so they manage when they have a public event. It's an interesting ritual. But so I have one question. Yeah. So you mentioned that in your filters you are using the same material than the FFP2 masks. But I don't remember that when I was wearing those masks, they were colored like this. How is it possible that your filter catches more?
The FFP2 mask has many layers.
Ah, I see.
This one is the one that is inside. Mm. So I hope not that it's changing the color when you're wearing the masks, because then it's not working. Because there are many, they put many layers them. Like there's a very fine one outside, then comes a bigger one and a bigger one and a bigger one.
Si tu peux traduire, s'il te plaît.
Donc sur un masque FFP2, il y a cette matière-là.
Ouais,
mais en fait, en plusieurs couches, on a assez nombreuses couches. Et là, elle n'en met qu'une seule. Et donc, du coup, c'est pour ça que quand tu portes un masque, les particules, elles sont retenues sur toutes ces couches successivement. Et elles ne sont, en général, les masques ne sont pas colorés, en tout cas, pas très vite. Et voilà. Après, moi, j'ai plein de questions, donc faut m'arrêter.
Et pourquoi tu as montré dans la vidéo moi, je vois ça en carrière quand j'y vais, les anciennes cultures de champignons par bottes. Pourquoi t'as mis ça comme photo?
Why I put this image?
From mushroom culture in bottes.
Because it's because I wanted to make this parallel that life can breed everywhere.
Okay.
So because we're putting our dead bodies there. And we think now they're out of our sight and everything is fine, but actually they will come back through the mushrooms again. Like the mushrooms are feeding also on them, and it becomes again part of the cycle. This was the point.
Et puis on peut parler des spores, hein, des champignons aussi.
Exactly, and they will also then come out when we are using the stones that I being put out and so on and so forth. So they are being put into the air again.
It's a particular vision of catacombs.
With your work, do you think that you would be able to measure a moment where the air quality and the composition of the air quality would create more death than life? For instance, when there is like sometimes in Beijing, for instance, where some episodes, do you think maybe it's like possible to measure that kind of moment with your filter?
So when the toxic concentration becomes that high that it's already feeding some other creatures.
Yeah, or more than feed.
This is like a book for science fiction. Well, but as I showed, for example, with the Notre Dame that was burned down, but there are still plants growing there. I mean, I didn't do, like, the link is more metaphorical than actual because I didn't measure, like, all of this, but it's incredible the abilities that plants have. And these plants are growing in cities because they're already used to this environment, like low nutrients. It's not because they adapt to the city. They have been there before the city existed. Mm-hmm. So there are plants, for example, the dandelion that has this yellow, the yellow flower, you know that? It's incredible because this flower is already adapting to the situation in the city. They are not spreading their seeds very far, but they're spreading them very close to their family. Mm. Because the probability that they will grow next to the other one is much higher in a city than somewhere else where there's everywhere concrete. So they're already having an evolution that is far beyond what we can fathom, you know, in the short period that we exist. So to your question, I'm sure that there are plants surviving also in Beijing and other places where it's the high toxic concentrations, because otherwise there could be no people living because they need the oxygen from somewhere.
Okay. Just pour fixer les idées, on parle beaucoup de la pollution en Chine, ils ont fait beaucoup d'efforts quand même, on pourra en discuter de ce qui s'est passé en Chine. Il y a quand même, malgré tout, énormément de changements.
Yeah.
Et ces situations qu'on a connues en Chine, elles existaient en Europe il n'y a pas si longtemps. Mm. Et moi, quand j'étais enfant, on parlait encore du smog londonien. Et là, je viens de vérifier, en 1952, 4000 morts, 100 000 malades, pendant le mois de décembre, parce que les gens se chauffent au charbon. Et ça, c'est des choses qui devaient exister, peut-être moindres à Paris, mais ça existait aussi, je pense.
Yeah.
Et donc les gens qui critiquent l'écologie aiment souvent dire que c'était on a fait déjà beaucoup de progrès et que l'air est très très pur à Paris par rapport à ce qu'il a été avant.
I find it also interesting to see everything in a different perspective of time, because we always talk about the industrialization as the first marker where the pollution went so high, but it's not true. Like the Roman Empire, for example, to produce their silver coins, they had the biggest mines, and they're the first ones who polluted already the air. So it's not like a specific marker in human history where industrialization and then everything is like is being ruined. It's not true. It has been done before.
Je crois qu'on trouve des traces du plomb romain dans l'Antarctique.
Ah oui. Ah, yeah, that's it. Exactly.
Transporté par l'atmosphère, je pense.
Yeah.
La pollution au plomb. Et parce que quand tu mines de l'argent, effectivement, il est mélangé souvent avec des métaux polluants. Il y avait beaucoup de plomb utilisé aussi des Romains.
And exactly here at the MIG, I listened to a wonderful presentation by these two artists who have been looking into mosses. And they saw like the same moss species exist in the north and in the south of the world, like the same species, and they don't understand how they travel in this huge distance.
The bipolar mosses.
Yeah, exactly.
By Zurich.
J'avais une question, peut-être que complètement à côté de la plaque, mais je me suis toujours posé la question, vraiment, si tu réduisais la vitesse des voitures, vraiment, si ça améliorait c'est contraire, ça faisait baisser la pollution, ou alors si ça l'amplifiait du haut bouchon.
Je me suis toujours posé cette question.
Most of the pollution comes from the brakes. The, c'est les freins qui font la pollution. Les pneus aussi. Donc plus les voitures sont lourdes, plus enfin, les grosses voitures modernes, les SUV, font beaucoup de pollution en particules parce qu'on use les pneus. La pollution en particules des moteurs, c'est assez bien géré maintenant. On a des filtres, des trucs comme ça.
Donc on a le test, je vous...
Ça, c'est un argument qu'on voit dans la campagne électorale. Sarah Knafo, de l'extrême droite, avait augmenté la vitesse sur le périphérique à 80 km/h pour réduire la pollution. C'est ce qu'elle a écrit.
Non, mais moi, je te pose la question à
toi. Est-ce que c'est vrai? Ça, je pense, c'est une légende urbaine d'extrême droite. Voilà, c'est vrai.
Ok, bon, bah non, mais je...
yeah, that's interesting. Also, that there's so much technology being into looking into these filters of cars, but the wheel never changed. In the whole history of cars, right? So it's like redirecting actually the technology to one specific element of the car.
By the way, it is also not very well known that the atmosphere in the subway in Paris is very much polluted by particles.
Yeah,
yeah. Back to the catacombs.
Ah oui, je fais ça avec Emmanuel. Il est scientifique, c'est pour ça.
Des questions.
What about microplastics? Is this also dust?
Yeah. The story that I was researching is super interesting, that the same particles that we find into the soil is also in the air, and they also found microplastic in the clouds.
J'avais une question sur les microplastiques, parce que ça me faisait vraiment penser au flux, du coup, avec le vent, tout ça. Donc, un peu comme les flux marins, est-ce qu'il y a un endroit sur Terre où les particules s'arrêtent, où il y a moins de vent, et du coup, il y a un tas de poussière qui se crée?
When how we can capture the microplastics?
Yeah, or there's less wind, and then they just accumulate.
Yeah, they just accumulate. I think that... They're going to be transported with million other particles. Yeah. As I said, there is something like dust does not exist. It's like millions of different particles that are travel like together. So when the virus and the microplastic meet, they become friends and then they're going to travel together. Mm-hmm. So there are so many things in the air. You cannot like, you do like this and then you have millions of different microorganisms. And I'm sure microplastic is just one of them. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the microplastic in the air, I mean, there's a European study, I think, that has been published this week, that the highest concentration comes actually from brakes and from wheels. No?
Yeah.
So it's operation, and it's not from pollution of the car. And, I was wondering, because also you're going to meet Hehe, I think, or you did, or you will.
Tomorrow
you will meet all the friends of Hehe.
Tu pourras l'indiquer sur le Wikipédia, c'est ce que...
L'étude?
Oui, ce sera intéressant.
Très bien, je note.
Avec un résumé en français.
So, one of the issues that they point to is when translating pollution data into visual codes and cues, is that there is a shift from visibility to measurability, so that the physical air pollution with fine particles is still very present, while the larger particles have been filtered out. So they don't have the impression that the air is polluted because you cannot see anything, which doesn't mean that the air is less polluted. So it's also a kind of phenomenological aspect of it that you cannot see, and so therefore you have to measure. That's one aspect. And then the second I wanted to highlight and to ask you, whenever I work with artists that work with dust, the past it often has been more about the physical aspects. You said dust is not existing, it's a conglomerate, but you seem to highlight more the biotic than the abiotic factors. In Anna Stonder's work, it's much more the carbon dust that is filtered with a mass, and then creating ink with actually the carbon particles. In Herwig Weiser from Vienna's work, it's most the kind of three-dimensional structure, the physical structure of his work, no? But the biotic aspect, it's quite new. So, I mean, what you seem to do with the dust keepers and with your project is that you're shifting or participating in the general shift from abiotic to biotic factors, and therefore reinvestigate dust from this angle. So just the question is whether this is intention to actually recharge the long-standing histories of artists working with dust through this kind of biotization.
Well, let's write me. I can write a PhD on this if you want to.
Yeah.
You can help me with this. I think I'm very much interested in the artistic, in the material part, but I'm even more interested in the social part. So I'm interested in the storytelling of dust, and how it is being charged in language, in images, in this material. So I think this is my main focus, but I want to invite artists to also put emphasis on this part that you just mentioned. It's like both, but I think the material part is not so important for me at the moment. It's like coming with it, but I want to start with the people. That's why I ask everyone at the beginning, what do you think dust is? And it's mostly like a story that is being told, right? Or how our body feels. And we're not thinking about the particular shape of a dust particle. Mm-hmm. Bueno?
So everything can be dust, like our, like,
yes,
skin.
Yes, that's why I like the poem by Michael Mada so much, because it starts already in the universe. Like when stars are colliding, it creates dust. It goes down into the earth. So this is like our first interaction, it's the cosmic dust, actually. And this is how, like, all the elements that we have, most of them come from the universe that landed on Earth. And then we excavate them again and present them back to the air. So all of this is dust, sooner or later.
I have a question about the male trees that are planted in Paris, because I suffer from allergies only in Paris. So this was always to me like an urban legend that I heard about the fact that there are only male trees planted in Paris, and because they keep trying to reproduce every year, they just produce more and more pollen. And so is it actually then an option to plant these ginkgo trees, which would then solve the problems, or is it not as simple as that?
The ginkgo trees was just an example of a species that I mentioned. Mm. I mean, when you go to the... If you go in direction to the Jardin des Plantes, there are many ginkgo trees who are all female.
Mm-hmm.
So the smell is horrific when you walk by there. But maybe they didn't know, as I said, because they changed their gender.
Mm.
Maybe they thought they plant male ones, but in the end they were female ones. Mm. This was just one example of a tree that I mentioned. Mm. But one website that I showed you was the tree website, maybe you saw it. This website here, Falling Fruit.
Falling Fruit?
Falling Fruit is an amazing website because it's also a citizen science project, and they cartographed all the trees that have fruits in the public space. So it's like an initiative that you can go there and eat them if you would like to. But I think I will not recommend this so much because they're mostly like close to bigger boulevards. Mm. And I don't know on which kind of soil they're standing. Like the mushrooms, they're absorbing all the toxic ingredients of the soil. But yeah, you can test and we can do a cooking session with all of these seeds.
I guess it's not really dangerous if it's just once.
Yeah.
No, why?
Yeah.
Because dangerous if you eat every day the polluted the vegetables from a polluted soil, but I don't. It's not a big deal.
J'avais suivi des cours, c'est ce qu'il disait.
So I like this website a lot because mm-hmm. it's kind of this guerrilla gardening, but mm-hmm. also to help people to actually see where there are actually fruit trees. I don't know how updated this is, but I think also Paris, while improving also the quality of the water of the Seine, also the air quality is getting better, because again this is a cycle. The water that is evaporated there, if it's not good, it's also landing in the air, and so on and so forth. So I think there are also much more trees now in Paris than it of course used to be, like female ones. But there are also trees that are male and producing fruits. Like, I'm just simplifying it. Mm. But when you look at the in the map, for example, it's like very striking that there are so many that are not producing fruits. And one argument by the city is it creates a huge mess. But actually, you couldn't just have like apples in the city, which would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. So I think that in Paris, every tree belonging to the city has an ID, and probably.
Ah, yeah, true.
And so you can check. Actually, you have all the data you would need. You can find it, and there is a.
How do I find this?
There is a data Paris in Paris data. I just discovered this.
Paris data.
Paris data. There is a page about trees with more than 200,000 records.
Et sur Art Paris, il y avait les pollens à un moment donné, mais là je vois plus.
It looks like it's raw data, but you can, it's open data, you can use
it. Amazing. Let's fight the asthmas. We need to create, like, also on the website, like, very anonymous asthma or allergy people who can then reunite and plant some fruit trees.
I remember that, you know, for example, Isabel, she's also fighting for the trees. Mm. You know, a lot of people, but it's very often that in Paris there are misunderstandings because actually the trees belonging to the city of Paris, they are actually quite preserved and they really know what they are doing.
Yeah.
And when they cut a tree, it always creates some controversy. Mm-hmm. But very often those trees do not belong to the city. They are some private trees. And the people who are managing the trees in Paris, I think they are very careful of many things, probably including this allergies issues.
Yeah.
And so I hope, for example, they planted a new, they call this a forest, close to the Gare Montparnasse, and they actually, it's very strange, they replaced an artwork that was installed here 40 years ago, when Ricardo Bofill built this Place de Catalogne. And it's very strange from a property viewpoint. They just destroyed artwork from a famous contemporary artist. And it's now replaced with what they call urban forest,
mm-hmm.
actually. So there are some positive aspects and some less positive aspects.
I mean, when we're speaking to improve the air quality in cities, just to look at trees will not lead anywhere. Mm. I mean, as I said, most of the trees cannot even get old here in cities. They're also specifically trees are being planted who can survive also these situations, being surrounded by concrete and so on, having just a radius of like 2 meters. And so that's why I'm emphasizing on the biopatina, because this is a huge surface, like a vertical surface that could be used, is already being used by these organisms. So this is more the emphasis, because the trees, I think, are suffering a lot, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they have an impact on temperature.
Yes,
for sure. Because there's lower temperature, for sure. Mm-hmm. So it's a cooling effect also, because they reflect. And therefore, they absorb with the darker pigments, while the asphalt is, of course, amplifying the heat.
Yes.
So, I mean, this effect is not totally. In Karlsruhe, there have been a lot of studies about this by ETAS, by the way.
Yes.
But so it's, very often they plant trees for temperature reasons, but at the same time, whenever you have trees or vegetation, then you have water. And so, if you have water, you have mosquitoes. And mosquitoes now in France, they are related with la malaria et la dengue.
Dengue fever.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually coming in France due to this.
Yes.
In the French cities.
Well, then we need to create more spaces for bats because they eat things, the mosquitoes.
But we also need to. We also need to have some room for
telephone communication because it disturbs the bats.
Then we need to switch off the light from the Eiffel Tower because this is also disturbing the.
But you know it's okay. So you need a little bit of dengue.
Ah, okay. Are you in favor of the mosquito? Okay.
It's horrible in summer. It's horrible. There are a lot of mosquitoes.
A lot of mosquitoes. Yes, they are very small ones. But it's an issue.
I really like the. For me, I take away this what you explained so well, that everything is mixed together because. It's always thinking about either the rubber, like it's always in these categories, like it's this or this, but then okay, it's a virus and the pollen, and it's kind of beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The relationship between pollen and dust, I mean, it's interesting, no?
Yeah.
And how far also, I mean, we want this pollen and we want bees. So what status in your research has the pollen?
A big status, an important status. But again, when I ask about this, everyone is talking about allergies.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what I'm talking about, it always have a negative connotation. So I think art in that matter, or literature or film, can contribute a lot to zoom in into these things as well and give them also a voice in a way, because I think it's super interesting.
Such a nice way of traveling.
Yeah, exactly. And with this comes also seeds, which I didn't even mention, but it's another layer of all of this. So, and I find it, I'm very interested in the language that we're using as I'm emphasizing what this green measures. Picking just up this kind of enemy, again, is creating this kind of, how to call Sündenbock in German, to find like one enemy to not talk about actually what is happening. This is a word that you're going to learn soon in your class.
I have a question. You didn't mention viruses. So my question is, viruses are very, very tiny. I imagine if we try to scale, to give a scale of this. So my question would be, what would be the limit for you to what we call dust? Would it be a grain of sand coming from Sahara? Or which is the maximum dimension of a particle being part of dust? What is the limit?
All of them. I don't have a limit.
It's like, I don't know.
A people
is not dust.
No, but it comes from dust and it will turn.
Maybe
to
it's
dust.
Airborne, right? It could be dust. Would be what can fly in the air?
Okay,
right?
Let's say the breathable sphere is my limit. The sphere where everything is circulating, where you have winds, clouds, everything above that is already not a non-breathable sphere where we cannot.
So for you, dust,
live.
Yeah, that's okay. Okay, for but, you, the limit is the human body with the is the human dust.
Well,
dust in general.
As I answered Jens' question, I'm interested in the level of people and of other creatures, but there is dust in the universe. There's dust below that. There's dust below this. There's dust below this. This can we also include, but I'm interested.
What is the definition in the dictionary of dust? You know?
This is the definition of dust, that is a multitude of particles. And then there's they're starting to differentiate between 1 micrometer, 10 micrometer, and so on and so forth.
I imagine that when we speak about star dust, it's an image, it's not really dust, I imagine. It's just metaphorical.
Well, when as
imagine,
when we speak of comets, say there is a few of dust. Yeah.
Exactly, but this is when they're colliding, they also create dust, and it will also fall here.
Yeah, okay.
So the question is, what is your limit? Not what is my limit? Ok.
it's possible to show one slide, the first slide.
Of the dust institute.
Dans le film.
Because it was in catacombs.
Dans le film.
Ah, dans le film.
Yeah, le premier, la première slide.
Oui. C'est pas des slides, c'est.
C'est la première image du film.
I know that I like that I like have for everyone something today.
No,
the one before.
Yeah. No, encore. There is one.
This is the first one.
No, it's not first.
The first one is the dust.
No.
Si, c'est ça. Après, c'est la suite avec un des catacombes.
This is the first.
Yeah.
And here comes the...
Okay, excuse me.
This one is the first.
Okay, thanks.
But what is, I mean, I know that we are finished, but I think also interesting...
It's not finished.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We have a lot of...
You had the dust free... Yes, like to go in, like the dust, the space without dust. And then I was thinking, yeah, it's like this typical computer production, chip production.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what about our...
We have an online question, actually.
Sorry. Yeah, but...
The spaces with minimal dust, like, mm-hmm. what are the... I only know, like, wafer production and
computer. Yeah, true.
But hospitals yes. or is this a topic, like...
But hospitals are not dust free.
No.
I mean, they're the the breathing zone of everything. Yes, but it's interesting. These labs, you mean, this white clean labs. Yes.
Where they try to really eliminate, is it only for computer chips or is this also...
No, I think even if you want to, for example, breed specific plants, and the seeds also need to be in a very sterile environment so no other microbes can enter. Like seed banks, they're also very sterile places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's always for protection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Emmanuel? Online question. Actually, I have an online question, but now listening to your question. In 92, when I was working for a few months in China, Chinese Academy of Science, where people were trying to build a device for detecting the gravitational waves. It's complicated stuff with lasers, and this achievement was made later, much later. But the experiment could not be carried out because of the dust in Beijing in 92. And the dust was, at that time, it was not pollution from industry. It was coming from the desert, the Gobi desert. It was
from where?
The Gobi desert.
À Pékin, il y avait des vagues à l'automne. Et on m'a dit que c'était chaque année. Qui empêchait de faire les expériences d'optique quantique. Il y avait une période où on ne pouvait pas faire d'expérience parce qu'il y avait trop de poussière dans l'air. La question en ligne, comment on dit dans les chaînes complotistes, on dit une question Internet.
Virtuel.
Voilà, question Internet. Et quelqu'un demande si on peut organiser une dust walk avant que tu partes de Paris.
Thank you, my friends, thank you. I'm going on a little road trip for the next 10 days, but on the last days of March, I will still be here, so I can organize that.
Certainly, we can help you to organize this.
Oh, mille grazie.
Yeah. Vous sentez l'odeur, là, il y a des nouilles qui sont recouvertes de poussière de fromage. Qui sont... Non, c'est vrai, quand tu achètes en supermarché du pseudo-parmesan, c'est
de la poussière. Pseudo-parmesan.
Bah, j'ai honte d'appeler ça parmesan, mais... C'est de la poussière de fromage. Voilà, bah donc on peut continuer à discuter, mais moi j'amène cette plâtrée de nouilles.
Et tu peux avancer aussi, s'il te plaît, encore.
Parce que t'es trop
fiante. And what's happening with the radio?
It goes on and on.
Hello, everyone. So we are officially finished, but we're gonna now eat the dust of cheese.
It's okay, but thanks.
Thank you, everyone. Kevin is saying I can just cut. Okay, I don't want to do it. Emmanuel!
Yeah, maybe you should cut. Tu devrais
pas. Et then moi.
Allô.
La partie radio diffusée est terminée. Nous allons mettre un terme à ce stream. Vous entendez le choc des bols. Bonne nuit.
D'accord, c'est
ce stream ne va pas s'éteindre.
C'est pas le rouge.
Non. Voilà. Ah,
est-ce que c'est vous qui venez